Welcome to the Founded Leader podcast, where we unpack the human and relational dilemmas founders face when leading scaling organizations. I'm Johanna. I'm your host and program manager for the leadership development program with the same name, Founded Leader. And in each episode, I'm joined by a founder, a researcher, and a leadership coach, each bringing their own unique perspective to the dilemma. So let's get started. Welcome to the Founded Leader podcast. In this episode, we're going to dive into co-founder dynamics, more specifically, what to do when your co-founder starts acting more like an employee, how to time the conversation when your own motivation shifts, and how to navigate tension between founders. I am very happy to introduce you to our three guests. I have Peter Beck, Christina Lubinski, and Magnus Davidsky Black with me in the studio. Peter, let's start with you. You are the CEO and the co-founder of Kampla, a B2B SaaS that makes ordering for canteens and suppliers way easier. And you co-founded the company when you were still in high school, and you have now scaled it internationally and employed 58 people as of today. And as a result, you made Forbes 30 under 30 this year. Congrats, that's a huge milestone.
Thank you.
And welcome. Now, Peter's experience with scaling company ties right into your work, Christina, as a professor at Copenhagen Business School, where you're also responsible for the very popular entrepreneurship courses, Founder's Dilemma and Organizing Growth. And your research, it dives into the tough decisions that founders face, including working with co-founders, and how these choices shape a venture's growth.
Super excited for this. Yes, thank you for the invitation.
Welcome. And Magnus, you get to work with founders and co-founder dynamics firsthand as a leadership coach. And you have a background in psychology and organizational development. And you also have 20 years of experience being a founder yourself.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for inviting me. Very happy to be here.
And I'm so excited to have all of you here. I can imagine that between the three of you, you have seen or you've experienced almost every co-founder dilemma or challenge that there is, or at least close to. So happy to have you here. I'm thinking that we're just going to start dive right into the dilemmas, shall
sure.
we?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Perfect. So our first dilemma is about a co-founder acting more like an employee than a co-founder. And I just want to make a disclaimer that all the names in the dilemmas are made up. But Freya says, I founded my startup alone way back and later my two co-founders joined. At first, we all did everything together and things worked out pretty smoothly with all of us pushing through and executing on everything. Over the last couple of years, we have been growing a lot to 12 employees, and it's starting to become a bit messy who does what. I am the CEO, and one of my co-founders is the CPO. The problem is that sometimes I feel that nothing happens unless we sit down together and discuss their priorities for the product. I wish you could be a bit more proactive in driving the roadmap because I feel that I'm becoming more of a manager to him, which somehow feels wrong given that we are co-founders. How should I handle this in the best way? So Peter, I'll start with you. You are a CEO and you are a co-founder as well. So what comes to your mind at first when you hear this dilemma?
When I read this dilemma and hear this dilemma, I think it's something that the majority of co-founders like experience to some degree during the journey. And I think it's really important that you just sit together, you talk it through, you discuss, okay, how do we make it happen and do it for the best of the company? Like, how do we set the company up for success? And then I also personally believe that as you scale, I don't know if that's necessarily time for this company yet or if that's further down the journey, but I think it's really important as you scale to also start separating between ownership, who are the co-founders, who owns the company, who started it, and who actually have which operational responsibilities, where I think it's not a given that if there's three or four co-founders that they necessarily should be in the three or four most important positions 5 or 10 years down the journey. I think it's important that you set the organization up for success, and that may not be all the founders and in the driving seat at all time during the journey. And I think it's just important to take those discussions with your co-founders to figure out how do you set the company up for success and align that. And I think to my experience, setting the company up to success is also what makes the founders thrive more in their work, because if you're not, in this case, if the person is not really great at being a CPO, maybe they also don't enjoy that. Maybe that is actually something that they may enjoy more and may benefit more, both personally, but also for the company.
And Christina, based on your research and experience, what are the first thing that comes to your mind when hearing this dilemma?
I mean, I really like listening to Peter. I think he put the nail on the head when he says role evolution is completely normal. And I think a lot of founders are really uncomfortable with that, right? I mean, but with some experience, you learn that that's actually part of scaling a company. And I think this is a classic founder dilemma in the academic literature, where it's from the stage, everyone does everything, to, okay, how do we make this into an organization now? And I really feel for Freya because she seems so torn and tortured between, on the one hand, being the CEO, where it's kind of natural to manage and have accountability, but then on the other hand, also being a co-founder, where the expectation was maybe more equality and everybody is the same, right? And I think that tension is completely normal. So I also want to say to Freya, relax, that's okay, right? I mean, but I think what needs to happen now is kind of figuring out how do we actually evolve these roles and maybe help her a little bit separating the role of the CEO from the role of a co-founder. And I think that can really help clarifying expectations and maybe saying to the chief product officer, I'd like you to take full ownership of the roadmap. I'm happy to support you along the way, but you should proactively drive the priorities. And if that conversation has never happened before, how would the CPO know, right? I mean, so I think that's an interesting discussion to have. And then the other is maybe to also formally separate the forums. So when co-founders meet and it's about alignment and vision and values, that's a different conversation than when executives meet and have discussions about performance, accountability, and deliverables. And I don't know if you've experienced that, Peter, in your own company, but I mean, that scaling process can be quite challenging also mentally for people to kind of figure out where they belong and what their role is. And so I think it helps to both normalize the evolution, but then also clarify some of these expectations around it.
It's a tough thing to sometimes navigate. When do you talk as like the owner? Because you also start, when you start scaling, you also start to get people into like the leadership team and leadership mm-hmm. position of different forms that also, of course, expect and should be keep people and have a key say in driving all the major decisions. But when do you choose which firms? And also when somebody feel that a wrong firm was chosen to make a decision, that I think it's just really important that you also give the feedback so you can constantly kind of adjust course, because it is very, very tough as a founder, also especially as a first-time founder, I think, figuring out when do you use what and where can you make which decisions.
That's where you need a good mentor, I guess.
Yeah. And I think what I'm thinking about here is also role and authorization. I think you both tap into that. But maybe I can take it back a little bit, a step back, because I also see something about the creation of the company here. There's an initial founder who created the first version of the company. And then there's two more founders coming into the company. So I actually often talk to the founders about the creation story of their startup, sort of the genesis. How did it all begin? You know, what initiated the startup? Who was in it? What persons were in the journey in the very beginning? And here we see an initial founder and then two co-founders coming in a little bit later. And I often see in the talks that I have with founders that these conversations are a little bit tough to have. About who actually started the main idea, the first creation, the first idea. So I would maybe advise Freya and her team to actually talk a little bit about what conversations did they have in the beginning when they were going to the second genesis. The first was maybe when she created the first version, and the second genesis was when they entered. And maybe also importantly, you know, what did they not talk about? What fantasies or mixed feelings or expectations did they not bring up? Mm-hmm. Because it's often so that that people come into a startup with a lot of ideas about what it is to be in a startup and to run a startup. And maybe they come with three different kinds of ideas about what it is to be a startup founder. Mm-hmm. So I think a good way to dig a little bit deeper is to start with a talk about how it all began for them. And what did they bring in to the game? And maybe also, you know, what are they afraid to talk about? Is there something they're avoiding to talk about? And maybe also there lies some of the potential to resolve this dilemma for them. Mm-hmm. And then actually I thought about a different stance as well, is more like the playful, the potential space of sitting together and talking about their product. It's the greatest thing in the world that is to talk about your product. You know that, Peter.
Yeah.
And also maybe, you know, not separating or focusing too much about the hard lines between the roles. But also when you're creating your own product, it is your baby that you are creating and recreating over and over again. And maybe it's okay to sit together, the founder team, and talk about the roadmap and where to take the product and not isolate that to a single founder. There's also a lot of pressure and maybe anxiety connected to being the one person who has to take the ultimate decision about the product because it's such a big part.
No, and ultimately, like, especially if now it doesn't say exactly which kind of company, but since they have a CPO, I kind of think SaaS software company. And if that's the case, I think the product is everything. It needs to be all the founders, all the executives that are very much involved in it. And of course, like if the CEO also needs to be there every day to drive it forward, of course, then it starts to be an issue. But I think that you have to be closely involved in driving the vision and the product. I think that's completely normal and as it should be. So I think it's also good to understand, like, why is it actually an issue? What level of involvement is actually required to drive it forward in this scenario?
I mean, I don't understand Freya as saying, I want nothing to do with it. I think absolutely in a small team like that, everybody should be involved, right? But the question is there someone driving the development? Is there someone kind of being initiative and trying things? And of course, a CEO might do that at some point, but it would be nice to have an active CPO that is potentially proactive in putting things on the table and making sure the conversation stays focused and there's actual decisions being made. I think what we see so often at this growth stage is that it's sort of bottlenecks at the top because no decisions are being made because everybody's waiting for the CEO to come in and fix it all. And the CEO simply doesn't have the time, the energy, the expertise in order to do that on a day-to-day basis on every decision within the company, which you can do when it's a team of two or three, but maybe at this stage, I forgot, is it 15 people or something like that? Yeah. It becomes more challenging, right? I mean, and so it's also about authorizing people to do the job that they are best at, like to figure out where people have their expertise and actually bring that kind of value to the company.
And then we're back to talking about authorization, right? Because there's self-authorization that the CPO in this case may need to self-authorize him or herself a little bit more, but also being authorized from the side, from the co-founders, from her peers, is also very important. Exactly. And that's also sometimes where it's hidden is in the history of their relationship.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree.
How to resolve that is by actually sitting together and talking about what actually happened back then, and how can we talk about also the delicate things.
I think that was such a gold nugget. I just want to underline it. The origin stories and the evolving origin stories of startup are so underappreciated, but I think are so incredibly impactful in that growth story, right? Because you're absolutely right. Every time there's new people coming to the founding team, they retell their story and they retell it from the bottom up fundamentally, right? And kind of on the side, reallocate relationships and roles between the team members, which can be so challenging if you're going through that growth stage.
But I think we can all agree that a conversation is needed. But how do you actually approach having that conversation?
From my experience, at least, I think the most important is that you kind of have the room for it. So you don't just bring it up when you have 15 minutes between two meetings middle of the day and you have to rush out after. But once you make sure that there is the room, there is time, the person knows that that's going to be talked about.
That's the experienced founder here. I totally agree. I think that makes a ton of sense. I also think it's important to tell people it's not that the relationship broke.
No.
It's just that the company is scaling to a different level. And so the structure hasn't kept up with the company's growth. And I think that's much easier for people to digest. It's not about something you did or that we're not friends anymore, but it's just a new environment that we're trying to adapt to, right? I mean, and that kind of adaptability, the going from the collective hustle to something a bit more structured and organized is a challenge in and of itself. But I think it feels less threatening if you frame it a little bit in that way and then clarify expectations and normalize that evolution. And maybe just to complicate the picture a little bit, sometimes it's not just the internal team, but there's also potential external stakeholders that are working with investors. And so that oftentimes leads to situations where suddenly you have to say, okay, is the CPO maybe not at the qualification level anymore that we need? And then how do we approach the topic of demotion?
Yeah.
Like, where do people go in the organization? Do they even stay in the organization if there is someone else coming in who has potential and more experience in that function, right? I mean, which is not an unusual situation at all. And founders often think, oh, I'm just going to avoid that because I love my team and they're amazing around me, right? But once you get into these relationships with other people, sometimes you don't have that luxury anymore. And if scale of the company, you said at the beginning, Peter, for the best of the company, right? Yeah. For the best of a company might also be decisions that are not necessarily for the best of all the individual people involved, yeah. Right?
I want to go back a bit to when Freya is having that conversation with her co-founder, because one thing that I'm sitting with that we also don't know at the moment, right? Why the CPO is not doing what he's supposed to do. So I'm also wondering if it's something in that conversation for Freya to be curious about what is actually going on. Is it a motivation issue? Is it lack of skills? Is it something structural that maybe like the CPO doesn't feel authorized, as we talked about before, to actually fully step into the role? What are your thoughts there?
It is very important to talk about it and then, you know, be maybe very open and ask, you know, the CPO, you know, I see that you're struggling a little bit. You know, what's going on? How does help look like to you? How can we support each other? Is there something you need? We all want the same thing, as you say, Peter. We want to make sure that this company is thriving, our product is growing and developing. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what's going on in your mind? Maybe that could be a starting point to keep it very open, but also to sort of not step into conclusions that are sort of already made for the CEO or the other third co-founder. But actually go into this conversation very open-minded. There might come things up that she hasn't thought about or haven't seen before or they haven't spoken about before. And then, yeah, be a little bit delicate with it and maybe not try to solve everything in the first meeting. Just see where it goes and plan to have a series of meetings about this.
From my experience also, at least, yeah, personally, it has always worked very well to like share some thoughts in writing when you kind of before you set the call up also because it allows the other person to reflect, because sometimes it's something that you have talked about 10 times and then there was maybe a something that happened that kind of said, okay, now we need to talk. And but also sometimes it's something that you maybe haven't shared and maybe your other co-founder don't even know that this is something you have been gradually thinking a little bit about. And I think when that's the case, I think my experience is if you send a kind of a message where you describe a little bit what are you feeling, where do you stand, and you would love to do a talk about it. It kind of also allows the other person to make the same level of reflections before the talk.
So if we are to answer Freya's question, then how should I handle this in the best way? So what I'm hearing is that prepare and prioritize the conversation, and it's not just one conversation. It should be an ongoing conversation. In these talks, separate the person from the role and from the company and think like the company is the first priority as well, and accept that role changes is part of the scaling company as well, and then be curious and open-minded when entering that conversation. Thank you for that. Should we move on to our second dilemma?
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
A quick note, this podcast is brought to you by Founder to Leader, Denmark's most established leadership development program for founders with personal responsibility. The program combines organizational psychology with experiential learning and is delivered by Copenhagen Business School and the Danish Industry Foundation. It's free to participate, so read more and apply at foundertoleader.dk.
All right, so our second dilemma is a co-founder that's having doubts and is unsure how to tell her co-founder. So Sarah writes, we have been building and scaling our company for a few years now, and I guess things are overall going okay for us. We have investors and clients, but of course things are not moving as fast as we would like. However, lately I've started wondering if this is really what I want to do. I'm 32 and I see my friends getting promoted, buying houses, traveling and starting families, and I'm starting to feel a bit stuck working long hours with low salary, and it's starting to take a toll on me. I'm also worried that I'm missing out on other things. My co-founder is a couple of years younger than me and very committed to this, basically working 24/7. I don't want to let the company or my co-founder and investors down, but my motivation is no longer the same. And to be honest, I had imagined we would be in a different place earning more money by now. I am not sure what to do.
Do I bring this up to my co-founder now, or do I wait until I have decided? So this, the founder here is clearly struggling with two things. The first one is her own motivation, and then it's this dilemma whether to share it with her co-founder now or once she has fully decided. So let's start with the timing question there. Christina, what comes to your mind? Do you talk about doubts early, or do you wait until you have made your final decision?
But I think in this particular situation, I would try and open that conversation early, but not as a decisive, do I stay or should I go? But really as an exploration of what's going on and what are some of the maybe more creative solutions. So what I see in this founder is that she has deep loyalty to the team and to the investors, but at the same time isn't sure if it's authentic to her own evolving goals anymore. And I think that's absolutely fair and human, right? I mean, she also observes kind of a mismatch of commitment where one of the co-founders is in it all the time, 24/7, and really rolling with the punches, whereas she's not sure if that sacrifice is still worth it for her. And so I think these are all very clear and totally fair reflections, right? So I would think a little bit of self-reflection first. Is this a temporary burnout, or is it a misalignment between the founder and the founder journey? Maybe including journaling or talking to a mentor or coach like the one we have around the table here, right? I mean, to help separate the daily fatigue from a more fundamental value shift, but without judgment, right? I mean, both of those are perfectly fair. And then I would open the conversation early, but really as an exploration. So I've been reflecting on my motivation and my work-life balance. I want to talk openly so that we can plan together. And I think that gives some opportunities for considering what are the options on the table. And there's a lot more in between, let me walk away and resign tomorrow, right? I mean, or let me stay in and maybe leave my husband and my kids at home, right? I mean, so I think there's more wiggle room in between, and it's worthwhile exploring that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to build on what you're saying, Christina, you know, the founder title is not a lifetime sentence. That's sort of what came to my mind, you know. And I think it's good to do a little bit of reality check once in a while. You know, how are things going? Is this as I imagined? She also mentions that she imagined that things would move faster. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good to stop once in a while and to think about, you know, this is really what I imagined. And there's also a lot of fantasies around. Yeah, you're laughing, Christina. You know that for sure as well. There's a lot of fantasies surrounding the startup ecosystem and how what it is to be a founder. And a lot of these fantasies, they come from, you know, society and investors and even TV shows like The Dragon's Den, et cetera, et cetera. But also some of these fantasies come from within. Maybe it's something that they bring into their role that stems from something in their life or their parents or something. And I think it's good, you know, to do this reality check with themselves and see, is this really me now in this part of, in this phase of my life? And then to remember that it's not a lifetime sentence, that you are actually able to change things. That's the great thing about being a founder. You are in the driver's seat. You can actually rearrange the way that, you know, things look and operate in your company. And maybe you want a different work life. And maybe you want to design your role a little bit differently or speak with your co-founders about how can we all, you know, readjust the way that we are thinking about our roles. I think it's good with the reality check. And then once that's done, I think there's a little bit of work to be done for yourself, but also involve your partners, your co-founders, and share your thoughts also where you're uncertain about things. Because I'm sure if she's feeling like that, one of the other co-founders may feel some of the same feelings as well. So sometimes putting forward what you are feeling is also very helpful to the rest of the team.
And thank you for this comment. So we have a project at Copenhagen Business School that looks at these fantasies. Mm. It's called Rethinking Entrepreneurship in Society. And we have started calling it an ideology because it is so powerful and it is so all-encompassing and also surprisingly global and homogeneous across the globe, which is surprising. Yeah. There's not a lot of ideologies that are so all-encompassing and so widespread, right? So you would imagine that the ideal of entrepreneurship in India or South Africa should be completely different from what we're celebrating in Denmark, but it's actually not. And that has very much to do with these fantasies that we've built up around entrepreneurship. And I think a lot of people fall into that trap of kind of buying into the fantasy and then getting disappointed in the day-to-day grind. And that doesn't necessarily mean people should quit, right? I mean, but it does mean checking in with people around you, checking in with yourself and figuring out what the next steps are for yourself, not planning it as a lifelong career, but maybe planning for the next milestone and for the next step on that path, right? I mean, and I think one of the things that makes entrepreneurship attractive is that it's such a good preparation for other careers following later on. So we talk about serial entrepreneurship, but entrepreneurship is also one building block towards many, many careers and vice versa. You might be really well served working in a bank for a while before you do what Peter does daily and, you know, build your own company, right? So I think there is a lot of like clashes between the reality of entrepreneurship and what we kind of project. And I count myself as part of the problem here because as a teacher of entrepreneurship, as a professor of entrepreneurship, I maybe contribute to that at times, right? I mean, so I think it's worth stepping back and also reflecting on us as society and why we are celebrating entrepreneurship in that way.
I was thinking, looking at this dilemma, I think it's something that every co-founder relationship experience during the journey at some point, various reason, I think if we split it up into two paths, you also did like the both when and how to bring it up, but also, okay, then the more underlying issue, I think on the last one, I think you should definitely bring it up. You should 100% not wait, in my opinion. Like, I think being a co-founder with someone, I agree, it's definitely not a lifelong commitment, but it's still a big commitment. So it's a partner, almost like a romantic relationship where honesty is like really, really crucial in my opinion. And I think the moment that you start to consider these things, you should, in my opinion, 100% bring it up. I think you should not bring it up in your leadership meeting and mention to all the employees, but I think in your co-founders, I think it's really important that you can address and talk about these things because it's completely normal and it's how it should be. So I would definitely not wait, no matter how confident she is in the decision, I would bring it up because they can also help, they can reflect, they can talk about it together, they can be in the journey of creating a company and also the personal things at the same time. And then I think on the more fundamental about is, in my head it comes really down to, is the sacrifices that this journey has, is that really worth it? And I think that's something that of course many founders are like consider at some point during the journey, especially if it goes less well, but also sometimes if it goes very well, because there is these fantasies around what is it like to start a company? What is it like to, like, yes, you're your own boss, you can decide your own time, but does it really feel like that if you just work 15 hours a day and you feel like you can never get to the bottom of your inbox? And I feel I can also see that personally. Like I'm traveling this year, I think it will hit 200 travel days. And for some, that sounds extreme, and to some degree is, but it's also like, that's one of the sacrifices that I at least have chosen to make. And I'm happy about that personally, at the moment at least. But I think it's also really important that you can bring up, like, what do you feel that you're sacrificing, no matter if it's hurting your family relationships, your romantic relationships, your time you have with friends, or are you worried about if it will allow you to buy the home or have a kid, or no matter what, like things it starts to, where the sacrifice starts to become something you worry a lot about. And I think it's something we also have experienced a lot, at least, that you have a couple of times, also more than a couple, where you really sit together and reassess the commitment. Like, what is it actually that we are signed up to here? Because as you mentioned, it's not necessarily a lifelong quest, but like, what are we actually, do we agree on the commitment that we have in the company? And I think for us, the times where we take investments in have been like the points or the point in time where we've really reflected and have had a lot of good talks about, okay, what are we actually doing here? What is the actual that we want to achieve? And what is the commitment that we have to each other and the company? Yeah, ourselves, for the employees, for the investors, I think is important.
So something that came to mind, Peter, was sort of how do we decide how our chains will look like, our handcuffs, like what sort of jail are we putting together here? And maybe also how does breaking free of that jail or these chains look like? You know, are there other ways to be a founder and to own a company? And I think it's a very good conversation to have with your co-founders, but maybe also with your family and friends once in a while to make that sort of check in. You know, is this consuming me in a degree where I'm losing touch with my family or friends or other surroundings? And I think it's good to make a conscious decision about that and not just to let, you know, the circumstances lead you without really, you know, making an active decision yourself.
And also, what are the ambitions, but also somewhat the realistic outcomes of the company? And is it worth the sacrifices that you make? And do you feel like that's the right thing to do? Because I think there's a lot of ways to be an entrepreneur. There's a lot of ways to start a company. It doesn't need to be 60 hours a week and lots of sacrifice. You can do it in many other ways. But I think if you want to build something extraordinary, if you want to build like $1 billion outcomes, like you, it does take.
You got to put in the hours.
Yeah. That's at least in the first five and potentially also more. Like it takes something to build those kind of outcomes. But if you want to build something in another scale and another ambition level, I think there's a lot of other ways to do it as well. And even if your ambitions are very, very high, you can still discuss like, what sacrifices are you willing to make and how can you build the organization and the team around it? Does traveling not work for you? Is it important for you that you can get multiple kids during the journey? Is it important for you? Like, what is important for you? And then I think it is possible to design the organization around that. But we have also, between us three co-founders, we also have different things that we value more. For some, it's really important to be in the same physical place. For others, it's really important to have a lot of holiday and a lot of weekends and a lot of evenings completely off and so on. So I think it also varies from people to people what sacrifices mean more.
I really like that so much, both of you. I say, like, one thing that I've observed when I work with founders is that we've gotten so bad at talking about entrepreneurship because we're all in the Löwen's Den Shark Tank mode all the time. So when people talk about their startups, it's all about that amazing outcome that's going to happen in the future. We're putting this in to change the world. We're doing this and this. So you're constantly in pitch mode.
Yeah.
And I think that's really bad for the meaningful conversation with significant others around you. So I think kind of figuring out other ways to talk about the sacrifices of entrepreneurship and the how willing are you to do this and what would that look like is really important in the longer run.
Yesterday evening, I went to a startup event and there were maybe 30 different founders and everyone, you start the conversation, you know, how are things going in your journey? And everybody, like all the 30 people I talk with all say, oh, it's going great. And then elaborate, some of them maybe mention a little bit of a issue or dilemma they're having, or we have flatlined a little, but now we're really growing again soon. And like, it's always the, especially of course, it's a two-minute conversation. Of course, you don't want to pour your heart out and say, oh, it's been the most terrible year. But I think it just creates these fantasies that, okay, if you ask the founders, they all seem, this is great, this is, but in reality, that's maybe not always this case, but allowed to talk about.
I also want to talk about zombies. Can I bring up the zombies? Like, no, because I think this is a topic I'm really passionate about right now, which is, how do you actually close down a company? And I had a really interesting conversation with the founding team where everybody agreed, the company was great, it taught us a lot, but we want to close it down right now.
Yeah.
And yet they spent about 2.5 years trying to realize an exit. And they were like, we would love to sell this even if it was just for $1. I was like, why?
Right,
like,
free.
What is the purpose of that, right?
Yeah.
But the purpose of that is so that you can tell your own life story as having built an entrepreneurial venture and having sold it versus having built an entrepreneurial venture and then just we closed it down.
Yeah.
Does not sound as
making
good, right?
The isn't exit.
Yeah. And so you have to make the exit, even if it's not about financial value at all. It's actually about narrative value to yourself and how you tell your story.
Yeah.
And of course, that makes very little sense to anyone who's thinking purely rational, but it has its own rationality, right? And it fits into all of these different variants. Mm-hmm. And I think the risk in this scenario is not so much that she would quit. The risk is that she would become a zombie founder who is in the company but is not doing the job, right? Is checked out, is mentally kind of broken down and doesn't really want to do it. And that will drag everyone down, right? I mean, so I think both the zombie companies that only exist so that they one day realize an exit for one krona, but also the zombie founders who are not fully, you know, checked in anymore, right? Those are real challenges to entrepreneurship versus the open, transparent conversation that Peter was also talking about. That's actually not a risk. That's just a company evolving. Yeah. That's in many ways a good thing, right?
I've never heard the term zombie funder before, but it makes sense. It sounds like that key takeaways for Sarah here is to absolutely have the conversation early so that you can explore this together with your co-founder, because again, it's not completely black and white. It's not quit today or stay forever in this company. It's also be self-reflective before and reflect before you go into that conversation so you know a bit more about what you are feeling yourself and what would feel good and not good for you. And also something around, it's okay to have doubts. Entrepreneurship means sacrifices and you need to be aware of that. And it's something that you kind of need to negotiate with yourself and with your family and with your co-founders and friends on an ongoing basis as well. And regular reality checks.
Mm.
Did I miss anything or did that kind of summarize?
I think it sounds good. Yeah.
And don't be a zombie founder.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Should we move on to our third and our last dilemma? So in our third and last dilemma, we are talking about tension between co-founders. So Oscar shares, my friend and I co-founded our company together, but over the last period, it feels like we're getting into conflicts all the time. We don't agree on our strategic priorities and on who has the final say. On paper, I'm the CEO, but we decided a long time ago that we make decisions together as a team. Very soon, we need to make a big strategic decision about our product. But every time I try to move things forward, my co-founder pushes back. We go in circles, it's exhausting, and I feel powerless. Any advice? Magnus, if a founder comes to you feeling this way, what would you be curious about? What would be questions that you would explore?
Yeah, what really caught my mind here in this dilemma is the very opening of the dilemma. My friend and I founded this company together. And, you know, that's often how it goes. You know, it's a good friend, it's a colleague from your studies or whatever. But in this case, it is really a good friend. So that's the initial relationship that they have. They were good friends to begin with. And then they start to work together and they spend so many hours in a different relation, being co-founders, professional partners together. And it's definitely something that we see very often that, you know, you start as friends and along the way, the friendship sort of goes in the back and the professional relationship is what is more dominant. And I often talk to founders about the importance of this, that you start out as friends and then you lose your friendship. And there's a lot of, you know, mixed feelings about that because it's a good friend that you have lost along the way, but you've built something great as well. So maybe there's a lot of mixed emotions here. And I think a good thing to include in this conversation is really to realize that something is lost along the way of creating something new. And there might be sadness connected with this or the feeling of loss or loneliness or whatever, because you are not able to use that person anymore as your friend, but you will have to sort of reinvent your relationship and see, you know, you are now colleagues, you are co-founders, you are friendly towards each other, but maybe you don't see each other privately anymore. So I think that's something that I'm very conscious about talking to these founders that come to me with these types of dilemmas, to realize that there is a real loss here, and then to deal with it and realize it, and then to maybe redefine, you know, what their relationship could be in the future.
When friends found together, we assume the friendship gets kind of frozen because there's something else that you build on top of it. But of course, that's not right, right? All of these relationships continue. I think the problem here in many ways is the consensus decision-making, which founders celebrate so much because it gives a feeling of like one person, one vote, everybody is the same around the table. And for many early stage startups, that's a really nice setup and works really well. But from seeing it over and over again, I also have to say that the model almost always collapses under the weight of strategic trade-offs and under the weight of organizational change. And I think it's worth having those conversations early. I have no problem with early stage startups deciding on consensus decision-making, but I think they should have built into that an idea of what this will evolve into as the company grows and there's new trade-offs and challenges that come along, right? And I think one of the challenges here is this, first of all, informal agreement that there would be joint decision-making, but then that clearly undermines the role of a CEO Because if you're not the CEO, you're not actually making the decisions. And how do you handle that, right? Mm-hmm. And so to me, titles without authorities, I always say, are like empty calories. They look good, but they don't nurture the organization. They're not going to do anything good for you. And you need some kale on the plate every now and then, right? So I think it's important to figure out how you're actually going to do that, right? Roles, mm-hmm. roles and titles must have teeth if you want to build a company in that way. Mm-hmm. And then the other reflection I had is that circling is way costlier than conflict. And I think oftentimes between co-founders, people try to avoid the conflict because they worry about what they will do to the co-founder relationship, but also to the friendship relationship. And I think that's a really challenging and damaging dynamic, because if you continuously avoid that conflict, you will never have that healthy thunderstorm, right, which would actually help the company evolve. So I think a healthy conflict can actually be really good for an organization and can sharpen strategy and sharpen roles and things like that. But it takes a little bit of courage to go there. But the endless circular debates, they really zap morale and create an organizational drift that is almost impossible to turn around. Yeah. I don't know, Peter, if you ever experienced something like that.
As I see it, I also see like the main advantage that startups have over big corporations is speed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you suddenly lose that speed going in circles, then you kind of lose your main competitive advantage that you are agile, that you're fast, that you can adapt, and that you can really just go really, really fast in a direction, no matter if you need to disrupt yourself, if you need to change pricing model, if you need, like, no matter what you need to do, you have the speed and the power to be able to do that a lot faster than big corporations. And I think losing that is pretty much the death of a startup. But I also feel that in this one, there's a couple of like underlying things here. There's both that it's mentioned in the dilemma that they don't agree on strategic priorities, but it's also mentioned that it feels like powerless. It feels we move in circles. We don't really move forward. And I think there's a couple of things here. I think, first of all, there's, of course, decision-making power, like who can make which decisions, I think, which is important to agree on, like, okay, can I hire people? Can I not hire people? Can I do this? Can I do that? I think that's great to be aligned on. Of course, as you scale, you would have, like, it's not possible for people to be involved in every decision, no matter if it's giving somebody a raise, if it's making this customer a discount or whatever. From tiny decisions to bigger decisions, of course, you need to align who plays a role in what. But I think when it comes to the most important, like, strategic decisions on like who are we, why do we play, what do we want to do, how do we achieve these things, I think it's so crucial that you as an organization, not just in the co-founder team, but also in the leadership team and below, are extremely aligned and committed to that. That doesn't necessarily mean that when you take the initial conversation that you are all in alignment, but it's really important that you can like kind of discuss it, debate it, you can then agree and align, and then you also commit to it.
I think there is something about moving, you know, in two different dimensions, both the rational dimension and the irrational dimension, because what you're saying here, Peter, is very rational, you know.
Yeah.
You have to make, you know, clever decisions and informed decisions and put the commitment in. But for these people here, it sounds like it's really difficult to stay rational. There's something disturbing them from being rational about their decision making. They're moving around in circles and they keep having conflicts. And I think maybe a starting point is also to understand, you know, where do these conflicts stem from? What is the conflicts about? And I think they cannot see it themselves. There's something that in their relationship or in their ability to talk about, you know, what is important for them, that they're not handling it in a way that moves them forward. I think also realizing that we are also irrational people. We're rational people and irrational people at the same time. And there's an ever, you know, pendling between the rational and the irrational. And here, maybe the emotions of them and their relationship is disturbing them and hindering them from actually moving forward. Mm-hmm. And there's a dynamic called hidden family dynamics. And in this sense, they're probably almost the same age. So one could imagine that there are some hidden sibling dynamics, that they are, you know, they're loving each other and they're hating each other at the same time, which is really normal and common for siblings. And also they're in competition with each other and they're also in rivalry with each other. So it's a difficult relationship to navigate also, to be almost maybe same age, have the same ambitions, and being friends at the same time. And maybe that sort of irrational state of mind is hindering them from actually making those important decisions and moving forward. And that is really difficult to deal with yourself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need something or someone from the outside to come in and help them with resolving this and maybe having conversation with each of them individually, but also together to see, you know, what's going on here, what's at stake. Again, what are we not talking about here? Mm-hmm. And that clearness is really difficult to create yourself. I think that's a good situation to bring in someone who can help them with these things.
I think it's really great thought that actually the underlying issue may not be that they don't agree on strategic priorities. Mm-hmm. It may be that they just have a hard time discussing them and debating them, because we all know how like some dialogues at times can be like it's actually maybe more about who ends up being right rather than what is right.
Is it like a proxy discussion?
Yeah, yeah.
Hiding something else that is the real discussion underneath.
So if I am to summarize, Oscar asked for advice in this situation. Mm-hmm. And the takeaways then is that accept that when you're scaling your company, you need to professionalize your relationships and also the roles within the company. And that's part of the game. It's very important to figure out what's going on below the surface. And here it might not be that it is a strategic product decision that is the problem. It's probably something going on underneath that. Not having healthy conflicts can be costly for your organization. And maybe in this scenario, also what I'm hearing, then consider getting external help as well in an outside perspective, since there are already a lot of conflicts going on within the relationships. That's unfortunately everything for today. So thank you so much, Peter and Christina and Magnus, for being here and taking the time. It was a pleasure having you. And to everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in to the Founded Leader podcast. I will speak to you next time. And if you like what you heard today, remember to subscribe, review, and share. Thank you.